At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 352 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we like to always start off by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks for everything that you guys, gals, and service animals do for us every day. We had an opportunity this weekend to meet a lot of different veterans.
We sure did, didn't we? Mm-hmm. It was nice. Lovely, lovely people.
And I will encourage you to do what we do. Not that we're anything special, but if you see somebody that you know is either active or a veteran, if they're an active military or a veteran, because they've got a cap on or a t-shirt or something that says it, thank them for their service. You'd be surprised how many times we have somebody literally tear up because it means that much to them.
Yeah.
So I know it doesn't happen as much as it should.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, it's just really amazing how it does affect them. So we appreciate them so much. And, you know, they risk their lives to protect us. And that's a respectful thing to do.
We went to a show the other night. And the show we go to, we've been going to for years in Pigeon Forge. And they have a reputation for always thanking the military and civil or the military and veterans and having them stand up. And it's under new ownership. And we were near the end of the show, and I didn't think they were going to do it. And I was kind of disappointed, and I was going to make it a point to say something about they need to put that back in the show. But then they actually went above and beyond and actually talked about how our veterans are underappreciated, and they're the ones behind the scenes that don't get the credit for us being able to do things like do a podcast or them put on a show or whatever we are, because we are the home of the brave.
Absolutely.
And the home of the free. And that's because of those people. So we just want to echo that sentiment that, yes, you are appreciated by us.
Amen.
Tracy, I also want to mention that a lot of people are struggling. We keep an eye on the group even when we're out of town. And there was a couple of people specifically that really are struggling right now with dependency problems, things like possible probation problems, and whatever it is that's got you down, please know there's somebody in our group, there's several somebodies that will give you some encouragement and be there for you to help you work through whatever issues that you have. Don't ever think you got to go through these things alone.
No, and I've seen a lot of it the past 2 or 3 days. And thank you guys for reaching out to people. And we appreciate y'all so much. You're the best. And, you know, besides our group, you guys can also call the crisis hotline at 988. You can also text at 741-741. Call Jerry Wright anytime. And just know that there's somebody out there for you guys, and we're here for you.
Tracy, we've got a fun show tonight.
Oh, boy.
And we have a special guest. I know it's probably been a couple of weeks since we had a special guest on, but we're back on the ball. So I know for the next 2 weeks, we've got special guests.
Yay, great. Love it.
But tonight, we've got a young lady by the name of Leslie Cody.
Mm-hmm.
She's pulling double time is what she's doing.
Whoa.
She's a therapist by day.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a demonologist by night, so to speak.
Well, bless her heart.
So we actually get to talk to her about both sides mm-hmm. of the fence. So when somebody comes to you and says, hey, I think I've got something going on, she can look at it from a therapist standpoint and try to rule out that aspect
mm-hmm.
and get them the proper help if it is more of a therapy situation. Or she can get them the help needed if it's more of a spiritual situation.
That is so amazing.
So we go into a lot of detail in the conversation. So I think it'll be interesting for most people listening, because most people will probably thought it would be cool if somebody did both.
Mm-hmm. And there you
go. So you could see both sides of it, how it works.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Absolutely. But tonight's story, Tracy, we've all heard of phantom hitchhiker stories, right? Obviously, Resurrection Mary in Chicago being the most popular, but every city's got them. They've all got the, I was going and this person was on the side of the road and they were in the car and then they weren't in the car. And then you've got the stories that you went and knocked on the door where they were supposed to go and found out that that person died several years ago and this was their birthday, blah, 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 blah.
I don't know what it would be freakier to me. To have somebody just appear in the car. I mean, I probably would wreck.
And there's definitely been those kind of stories, too.
I know. I just don't know what would be, like, the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I'm not up for surprises when I'm driving, especially if I'm, like, going down a freeway at, like, 80.
Oh, good grief. No way.
Probably not a time to be scared.
Yeah. Unless it's Cass, and he can join. He can come in.
Cass, my goodness.
I love him.
You remember we did the story? It was a Kentucky story, and I think the kid went to EKU,
mm-hmm.
and he had dropped his grandma off at the hospital.
Yes.
And was trying to get back, and he was in a situation where he looked back in his rearview mirror, and she was just in a car.
Yes, I do
remember
that.
And then come to find out she had
passed
away. About that time.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Woo-woo.
Well, Tracy, there's another popular, we're going to call it a hitchhiker story, because partly that's what she does. In the coastal part of Maine, the spirit is known as the Ghost of Catherine's Hill.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, we're going to discuss this piece of lore. So let's get started. In an area of the southeastern shore of the coast of Maine, there is a smaller area, kind of rural, but it's known as the Down East. That's what the locals call it. It's a small, remote area in an isolated region that would appear to be stuck in time. And I say that because it's got very quaint old buildings and tiny streets. More like you would see from 100 years ago.
Okay. Tiny streets.
It's a lot of the original buildings.
Good.
From when the town was built.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this area is a long secluded stretch of road where the Ghost of Catherine's Hill is said to reside. Now, Eric Meyer, he's a resident of the area. He says that just about everyone has heard some version of the legend. Some people will avoid this stretch of road during the nighttime. Some people will avoid it, period, any time of day. The road is actually called Blackwoods Road. And it is, I've seen pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is desolate. It is nothing but road and trees.
Yikes.
And you could imagine at nighttime, Well, we got one lady who, and we'll get to this later, but she says it is an absolute beautiful drive during the day and absolutely scary as hell at nighttime.
Oh my God, I bet it is.
Well, the remoteness, the isolation, and the usual fog are the primary reasons that people are freaked out, even without seeing the infamous ghost. Angie Hall, she spent her summers growing up with her family in the area. Now, they didn't live too far from Blackwoods Road, so she often heard the stories. Angie said that she had a unique encounter, to say the least, when she was about 19 years old. So let's paint the picture for you. One evening, it was Angie and her two cousins. Now, they were sleeping in one room. When they stayed over, they would usually all sleep in one room. Angie and her female cousin were sleeping in one bed, and her little cousin that was a boy was sleeping in a separate bed. Now, Angie had fallen asleep pretty quickly, as a matter of fact. And like I said, she was in bed with her cousin. Now, she wasn't sure exactly how long she had been asleep, but she was awoken by the feeling of someone staring at her. When she opened her eyes, her six-year-old cousin Brad was just inches from her face standing there. He was scared to death, and he wanted to sleep in the bed with her and his sister. Angie said that it was obvious that he was petrified. He didn't look like himself, so she, of course, said, yeah, you can get into bed with us, Brad. So Brad gets into bed. He gets between the two girls. It was sort of crowded, as you could imagine, three people in a bed, even if you're young. Mm-hmm. So Angie said, you know what? I can't get back to sleep. Eventually, she gets up and she goes over to sleep in the Brad's other room. Bed. Mm-hmm. Now, they're in the same room still, but she's in a different bed. On the way to the bed, though, she stopped to look out the window. And there was fog on the deck. Like I said, you're going to hear more and more during this story, fog is a usual thing there. Unusually usual.
Okay.
Now, she didn't really think about it, though. She just sees the fog, and this was normal. Now, the next morning at breakfast, Angie asked Brad why he was so scared the night before. Brad then informs her that he saw a girl on the deck. She had a white dress on and long brown hair. She was looking into the window. Now, Brad wouldn't have known the legend of the ghost of Catherine Hill, but Angie sure did. Thank you, Freddie. She knew that this had to be the ghost that she'd often heard about growing up. So, how about that for being scary?
That's pretty scary.
Now, that area, Tracy, known as Down East, is a very close-knit community. Lots of ghost stories, but none of them are more famous than the ghost of Catherine's Hill. Kathy Upton is a second-generation local historian, so she runs the museum and stuff down there, the archives of all the historical stuff of the city. She has been telling these stories for decades. And she says that the Down East area is outright fascinating. She said it's an old-fashioned way of life. All the old houses are still there, still intact and looking like they did 100 years ago.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Now, we mentioned that the fog being something that's often there. Because of the area where the Down East actually is, it's very susceptible to fog. It can pop up really quick, and it can stay for 2 hours or it can stay for 2 days.
Oh, no kidding.
Now, there's a bunch of extreme weather conditions here, which may explain why it's so remote and desolate. Mm-hmm. Why there's a lot of people that just decided this is not a good idea to make our home.
Right, right. Yeah, I would have to think twice about that myself.
In a place that's so remote, there isn't a lot of ways in and out. Pretty much one way, for the most part. The main road is Route 182, or more commonly known as Blackwood Road. The road starts at Hancock. It goes all the way to Cherryfield, and there's nothing but wilderness pretty much between here and there. There's a lake that it goes around, but it's just trees.
So, boo, if you break down or something, you're going to be in
trouble. Yeah, you're going to be screwed.
Yep.
Like that car we saw broke down at Cade's Cove yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And as you pass Cherryfield, you end up going up Catherine Hill. Now, this road actually has a pretty cool history. It was built by a shipbuilder by the name of Colonel John Black back in the 19th century. Now, Colonel Black was the overseer of a construction of the road. He thought that it would benefit merchants and settlers if they had some type of a decent roadway that actually, you know, went through that area. These days, it's primarily used by nature lovers. So it was a primary road back then. Now it's like, it'd get us to point A and point B.
Yeah.
But we don't want to go travel down it because of the ghosts.
Yeah. Just the daytime.
Back in the day, though, it was used by lumberjacks. At that time, there were tons and tons of virgin forest of pine trees that had never been touched in the area. And the lumber would actually be cut for the Royal Navy.
No kidding.
First of all, I don't know why you would say that. I have never joked about lumber. So,
what?
So way back then is when the legend of the ghost of Catherine's Hill was actually born. Now, the story goes, and we'll get more into detail, but the story goes basically that in the 1800s, there was a young newlywed couple, and they were killed on the road, and I guess it was a horse and carriage accident.
I guess if they flipped over and the carriage flipped on top of them, that would do it, I guess, right?
Or if you went over a
big old cliff. Edge. Oh, the poor horses.
You and the horses.
Aw.
But supposedly, the bride has haunted the woods ever since. But only when the fog rolls in.
So the guy didn't die?
He died too, spoiler alert. But he doesn't haunt the place.
Oh, whoops. My bad. I was like, what, is he too good to haunt? Or what's up?
If you see her ghost on a foggy night.
Or he's like, hey, you take this part of the road, and I'll go down yonder on that side of the road.
And you do the hill where you got to do all the walking.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like Walmart. I'll be at this door, and you'll be at that door, and we'll just haunt that way.
It's nice to think about a haunted Walmart.
Ooh.
Like in Galveston. Remember? The Walmart's haunted.
Yep, it is. That's for sure.
If you see her ghost on a foggy night, you may not make it off of Blackwood Road.
What?
That's the story.
Welcome.
Nobody knows exactly who this ghost was in life, but almost everyone knows her in death.
Aw, that's sad.
Most of the families that live in the area known as the Down East have lived there for generations. Now, these days, the fishing business pretty much is doing very well, but back over 200 years ago, when the settlement first started, it was all lumber industry, as we discussed earlier. Now, there
was nothing like some good fresh pine.
Well, there were no power tools back then either. So,
yeah, how good that smelled. I'm just like picturing it in my head.
I prefer cedar.
I do too. Cedar smells so good.
But everything back then had to be cut by hand, so it was grueling
work. Oh my gosh, how long would it? I wonder how long that would take.
A long time. As I just said,
man.
Down East Maine is very wet. They get 50 to 60 inches of rain every year.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
The winters can be absolutely brutal.
So I wonder if the trees, when they're wet, if it's easier to cut.
I would not think so.
You don't?
No.
Because you don't think it was like softening it up?
Well, it's only going to be soft for maybe an inch. And then you're into the core of the tree.
Sorry, go ahead with the story. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just kind of thinking, I just wonder if it would make any difference if it was. What?
Okay. Are you done?
I'm done.
No matter what the season, though, the locals can count on one thing. Fog. Heavy, dense fog. You can go from a beautiful, bright day, and 20 minutes later, fog will roll in. All right, Tracy, let's talk more about how the legend started and how the fog actually plays a part. I briefly told you that her and her husband were killed in a carriage accident, but I didn't really give you many details. The legend says that Catherine, that's her name, that's why it's Catherine's Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've actually said that was her name.
No, you didn't.
The legend says that Catherine and her husband had just been married. They got in the carriage and they started out for their honeymoon. They would have been traveling down an old stagecoach road because at the time this wasn't blacktopped or anything, obviously.
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they had like a pothole.
I don't think. I mean, I'm sure they had big holes. I'm sure they had big holes.
So, what if they were waiting till after they were married?
To hit a pothole?
No, to do the thing.
Well, I'm sure they were back then. That's kind of what people did.
What a ripoff. He didn't even get to do that. They didn't even get to do that. Man, life is not fair.
This is true.
Go ahead.
Anyway, that stagecoach road is what now is Blackwoods Road. Mm. As they started to cross what is now Catherine Hill, a strange ground fog started to kind of surround the carriage. Then the fog engulfs the entire carriage.
Oh, wow. You couldn't see nothing.
Yep. Soon they could not see anything in front of them.
Why didn't he just stop? Why didn't they wait till the fog passed?
That would have been the logical thing to do, but they didn't, apparently. So, they just kept going forward. And eventually, they would drive off of the mountain.
Oh, my gosh.
Without probably even realizing they were coming up on the end.
Oh, my goodness. That is horrible.
That is horrible.
He's going now. Like, they're falling over the cliff, and he's like, damn it. I told you we should have done something for this.
Well, and she probably looked at him and said, well, we're going down regardless.
Aww.
Anyway, as you can imagine.
I mean, maybe you could get like a really fast quickie before.
You
like,
should have a lot to contribute tonight on the sexual side.
I don't know. I feel like they got gypped. And I feel sorry for them. That's just a whole. Can you imagine not being able to see literally, and then the next thing you know, you're just going off a cliff? How awful is that? That's terrible.
Yeah, for about 20 seconds.
And the horses.
Again with the horses.
And the guy that drove the carriage.
I think they were driving their own carriage.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh.
As you can imagine, in the 1800s, this kind of fog would probably bring on a lot of superstition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is that fog here? Is there tied to something else?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe John Carpenter was back there. I don't know.
It could have been.
That's why these conditions brought us the legend of the ghost of Catherine Hill. So that's how the fog ties into it. That's why when she only supposedly is seen on foggy nights. Oh, and...
And you know what's weird about that? It's the fog. How can you see her if it's in the fog?
Well, it's not always a thick fog that you can't see around.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah, but her white dress would have faded in with the fog, so I don't get it.
I don't know. But in all the stories of Catherine's demise, she was also beheaded.
What? How did she beheaded herself?
Well, I think when you tumble off of a mountain in a carriage, that could probably easily happen.
Jerry, that's even terriblest.
That is not a word.
I know. That's terrible. Oh, man.
You're not allowed to take trips and come back on days we record.
I don't know. This is whole story heartbreaking.
All right. Let's talk about...
I mean, she didn't even have her head to comfort her.
I'm going to get through this story.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so let's talk about some sightings. And I will start off by saying some say that they've seen her headless body kind of wandering Blackwoods Road. Others say that she's wandering the woods perfectly intact with her head.
Oh, my goodness.
So I guess it depends on the sighting.
Yeah. Maybe she's down in the woods looking for her head. But you said it's still on there.
Yeah. Some say she's looking for her head. Others think she's looking for her husband.
Aww.
Yet others think that she may just be trying to find her way home.
Aww.
Not every sighting is connected to somebody having prior knowledge of the ghost, though. Deborah Newell, for example. Deborah and her husband went to an event in Bangor, Maine. That's where Stephen King lives.
Stephen King?
Yeah, he lives in Bangor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Bangor. I barely know her.
Mm.
Her husband was getting tired.
They didn't get to bang because they went over a cliff.
Her husband was getting tired, and he started to, you know how it is when you are like, you know, I think I don't even know if I can make it home.
Mm-hmm.
So Deborah volunteered to drive home. So she's driving Blackwoods Road. Her husband falls asleep, which is good that he wouldn't drive in.
Well, that's true. I mean, do they know about the road?
No, she doesn't know anything. Remember, mm-hmm. that's how I started it. You didn't have to have prior knowledge like Deborah.
Oh, okay.
Well, Deborah says that she's driving this stretch of road, driving down. She's the one that said driving down a day is beautiful, but at nighttime it's very eerie. The trees hang over top of the road, and it makes you feel closed in. She said that she wasn't scared, though. She just was a little more concerned about possibly hitting a deer, mm-hmm. which was a common occurrence, I would probably think. When she started to go up Catherine's Hill, though, she could see the fog starting.
Mm.
She still wasn't worried, though. But when she hit the crest of the hill, she said there was a woman standing in the road, almost as if the woman was made of fog. Now, Deborah could see her skirt blowing in the wind. Her hair was blowing back. So she knew this was a person.
Did she wake her husband up at this point?
No. And she didn't notice that anything blowing in the trees.
Oh,
so she could
like
see the wind
were,
blowing mm-hmm. her, but she didn't notice any leaves or trees or anything
oh,
blowing.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
weird.
She thought that was kind of odd, so that stood out to her. Deborah slammed her brakes on to avoid hitting the young lady, and she said the girl instantly disappeared. Now, when she slammed her brakes on, this woke her husband up, who asked, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
Deborah explained that there was a girl in the fog, but not only was the girl gone, so was the fog.
Wow.
The fog instantly had disappeared. Now, Deborah didn't know the story of Catherine, but her husband did. And he told her, you probably saw the ghost of Catherine's Hill.
And then that's when she reached over and slapped him and like, why didn't you warn me about this?
It's, well, you should have drove. Deborah was too shook up to drive, so the husband then took over the driving.
Because he's wide awake by now.
Probably. Much like when I let you drive. Some would say that Deborah and her husband were lucky because there are those who believe that Catherine may be vengeful.
Oh.
Some say.
Well, it's not their fault there's fog and they did all that stuff back in the day.
Yeah, but some say that if you don't stop for her, that she will curse you. But that ties into what I was talking about earlier, the hitchhiking part of the legend. Some will tell you that she's a hitchhiker on the side of the road. Now, there are hundreds of these accounts of Catherine asking for a ride, one of which is Abby's story. When Abby was a young child, she remembers being sick. Her dad was going to have to take her to the hospital at nighttime. When they were driving down Blackwoods Road, they came to Catherine's Hill. This is where her father noticed the fog up ahead. But in the fog, he noticed a figure that was materializing in the fog. He says, I wonder what she's doing up there. His daughter remembers hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
He stops. He gets out of the car, goes around to the passenger side. He opens the passenger side door. He flips down the seat. It's two-door.
Okay.
He
flips
down the seat so
she can get in.
She can get into the back. She does. She sits next to Abby in the back seat.
And Abby's like, what the?
They took off, and a few seconds later, he looks back to the rearview mirror, and the girl's not back there. He looks in his side mirror, and she's right back on the side of the road where he had picked her up at. So he stops. He backs all the way back to her. He apologizes, and he says, you know what, I'm sorry. I thought that you were in the car when we took off. He said she just stared at him. He got out of the car, went around again to the passenger side, opened the door, and again, the young lady gets in. Abby said someone definitely got in the car because she could feel it. You can feel when the seat goes down and all that stuff. Abby also said that she could see the shoes between the seats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They drive a short ways. The dad talks to her a little bit. He's looking in the mirror and he's talking to her. And he can see Abby and he can see the young lady. But the girl never responded. As he's talking to her, she just vanished. He stops. He runs around to the passenger seat and he opens the door. And all that's there was a puddle of water in the seat and a puddle of water in the floorboard.
Wow.
Abby said that as she got older and she heard the legends, she knew that they had seen the ghost of Catherine.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? That is crazy. What? That's cool, though.
That's very cool.
And what a nice gentleman he was.
He was.
Pick her up like twice. Wow.
Now, I will tell you that Abby, at the time she told the story, was in her 60s.
No.
And had since passed from the article that I read. She had since passed on.
Oh.
So this story had to go back to probably the 30s or something.
Oh, my goodness.
20s or 30s.
And she didn't talk about it until she was in her 60s.
No, I don't. I think she might have talked about it before, but the gentleman who got the story from her,
yeah,
said that she was 60 when he told that when she told him, but she had since passed. So, I don't know when this supposedly happened, but it had to be probably 20s or 30s.
Wow, that is a cool daggone story. What if they're hanging out in the afterlife?
You never know. Now we also had some, I guess, people that think that. Like I said earlier, that Catherine may be vengeful. It's said that if you're driving and you see Catherine and you don't stop to pick her up, a la what her dad did,
mm-hmm.
Well, good luck.
What will she do?
Well, there are an excessive amount of accidents on Blackwood Road.
Oh, like car wrecks, yeah.
So possibly that's the reason.
Oh.
Because it's not a, it's a pretty straight stretch of road. It's not a lot of windy curves and stuff like that, from my understanding. There was 33 accidents in a five-year stretch, which, if you're in a very secluded area, that's really not all that much. But in an area that doesn't get a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
And to be straight.
Wow.
Now, I have a theory on that, though. But, you know, they say a lot of these accidents happen more on straight roads because they lull you to sleep.
We have talked about that several times because we can't figure out. And I guess that would be a good reason, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, come to think of it, my two uncles both died on a straight stretch.
Well, and then, you know how it goes, too. If you have a small area of town, or whether it's the Bermuda Triangle, big area, or whether it's something small like Catherine's Hill, anything that goes wrong there, it's going to get blamed on a ghost.
Yeah.
So, that's how a lot of these legends start, so. All right, I got one more story that we'll end on here. It's kind of a cool story. I don't know how true it is, like any of these stories. You just never know, but it's still a cool story. And then we will listen to Leslie Cody. All right, there's a story. This is pretty well known up there. It's a story of a traveling salesman. He was going up the hill on a foggy night. He saw a headless woman, and he panicked.
Well, wouldn't you? I would, too.
He sped past her, and looking back, only to see the headless Catherine sitting in the back seat of his car.
Oh, he didn't get the one with the head.
He became so scared that he lost control of his car and he crashed.
Oh, no.
He would later die from his injuries, but not before telling the paramedics what caused the accident.
Oh, my gosh, he did? And I wonder what they were like, dude, how much you been drinking tonight?
Yeah, no kidding.
But wow. Anyway,
that is the story of the ghost of Catherine Hill.
Wow, that's so cool. What an interesting story.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Every once in a while, you find these gems.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me, who was it talking to me? I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, do you think you'll ever run out of stories?
Oh, yeah.
And where do you get? I'm like, oh.
I think there's somebody at the show last week.
I think it was. And it's like, no, there's so many stories mm-hmm. out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we really wanted to, you could pick any city. We could pick Louisville
mm-hmm.
or Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet we could do 6 months worth of stories just on a city.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Mm-mm.
So everybody's got the legends and stories and all this stuff. And sometimes you don't know them until you stumble across it. Like I stumbled across this by accident.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such a great story. And it just makes you want more, you know, just to hear some more different things that you would normally not hear. But it's just a lot of fun.
And see, this is in New England. I wonder if Jeff and Ray have actually covered this on their show. They do nothing but New England stories, and mm-hmm. I don't think I've heard this one on there.
Hmm.
I might have to tip them off.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's take a quick sponsor break, and then we will be back to tell you cruise info, show info.
Mofo.
I knew you were going to do that.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Don't act like you know
me. And then we're going to listen to Leslie Cody.
All right.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
All right, Tracy, real quick. Like I said, we have one upcoming show, which is May 20th.
Mm-hmm. We're going to jail.
The Boone County Jail Distillery, to be more exact. So we're doing the show in there with Middle Aged and Creeped Out and Tragedy of Cinema. It's going to be a blast. So there'll be three shows. You also get to tour. I think they said that they're going to let you tour the distillery as well.
That place is cool.
Yes. And you get to tour the jail area. Uh-huh. That's cool on its own,
it
right?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we've got a little sign where you can put on a striped convict suit or an orange jumpsuit and get your picture made, holding our little sign. So all that's included in your price of a ticket. And there's only, I think, 15 tickets left.
Oh, you guys are wonderful.
So there's not many. It's a small event. So
yeah,
it's there's not a lot of room. We're going to be inside of a jail cell.
How many people can you fit inside that jail cell?
But yeah, this is going to be so cool. And we can't wait to do it. And that's coming up on May 20th. That's a Saturday.
So. Yeah.
And there's a little drugstore.
Oh, guy, I'm so glad you said
there's
that.
There's a little drugstore in the square. This is in like a little town square.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. But there is a little drugstore that has the pork loin sandwiches.
It is big as your head.
It is. It would cover. You could pick it up and cover your entire face. It'd
you
be
can.
Something like
it's
off
like
of
crazy.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You can make a mask like that. But it is the best pork loin sandwich I've ever had. And I'm not exaggerating. I cannot wait to go back.
This place is so adorable, too. It's almost like stepping back in time.
It is. The whole town is like stepping back in time. So it's going to be really cool. We're so excited to be out there. Can't wait.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
All right. With that being said, July 15th and I think August 20th, 19th or 20th, Buffalo, Detroit, both of those shows back to back. So Buffalo is July, August is Detroit. That's our 7th anniversary show. Both of those shows will have Rojio and Justin from Mysterious Circumstances.
Yes.
And I know the show in Buffalo is going to have Tyler Allen from Minds of Madness as a special guest.
I know. We are so excited about that. We've never been to either one of those places. You might have been. Have you been to Detroit?
No, I've never been to Detroit.
No, I haven't either. So
that's I've been. I've never been to Michigan. The closest I've been to Michigan is Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be a new adventure, and we can't wait to see everybody and meet you guys. And
big help in that Michigan show from Sarah. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, yeah, Sarah. Thank you so much, doll.
She actually found a location for us and everything.
She did. She's wonderful.
And I said, can we get it for less money? She said, no. Okay.
Oh.
A lot of help you were. But yeah, it's going to be a blast. And we got a chance. We were in Pigeon Forge and we got a chance to check out the Gatlinburg location for the show with the confessionals. Mm-hmm. That show, let me tell you this. That show had 100 tickets available. It's in September. September 30th on Tracy and I's anniversary. 75 tickets have already been sold.
That is insane. Oh my gosh.
It'll be sold out in the next 2 months.
I know. I cannot wait. It's going to be so wonderful.
But we had a chance to check out the venue. It's pretty cool. And it's right next to City Hall and the police station. Mm-hmm. So plenty of parking. And
oh, yeah. Plenty of parking.
And it's going to be a blast. Can't wait. And it's across from Food Lion if you're hungry. All right, Cruz, Robin has told me he's already taken tons
of applicants
already for the cruise.
Good.
So we're off to a very good start.
Yes, we are so excited about that. We can't wait to see you guys come on this cruise. You're going to have a blast.
All right, Tracy, what do you got over there real quick for iTunes and Patreon?
We have my wonderful Mojo Lobster. Okay, Cummins, thank you, doll. And Rose and Nice, thank you guys so much for your reviews. We appreciate them so much. And please keep them coming if you can. It really helps us out. And we appreciate y'all taking your time out for that. And we didn't have any new Patreons this week, but that's cool. It's cool. But we just want to say thank you guys for continuing to support us and be there for us. Can't thank you all enough, and you guys are wonderful.
Yes, I second that. So, Tracy, we're going to talk to Leslie Cody. Mm-hmm. I did want to say, though, tomorrow I have an interview set up that we're recording, obviously, with Carrie Kennedy, Pet Psychic. Mm. And you already know what we're going to be talking about. Mm. And she's been spot on the last two times I talked to her. The first time was about a dog of mine that passed close to 20 years ago. And the other one was about Ninja and just about how he was feeling. Mm-hmm. And she was able to point out some hip problems and stuff that she had no clue about.
Nope, she had nothing.
But it had been diagnosed already. She was able to pick out exactly which hip it was and all this stuff. And, we consulted. I'm not going to lie. I did not believe in this kind of stuff. When I first interviewed her, I think I was actually honest with her then and said, I don't know if I believe. Mm-hmm. She made a believer out of me. Yes. Not once, but twice.
Yep. She was spot on, and it's crazy. So.
And I even reached out to her when we had to make our decision on whether we had to put Ninja down, which it really wasn't much of a decision. We knew what had to be done. But I did kind of consult with her and just say, hey, you know, what are you seeing without telling her really what was up? And she told us that Ninja said it was time without her knowing the situation. And, you know, I already know she asked if I was ready for this. And I told her probably not. But, you know, we'll break down. There's no doubt. I can't talk about Ninja without breaking down.
No, I can't either.
I just can't. So this is going to be a struggle, but Carrie is an absolute wonderful friend of ours, and she's somebody that I will never forget, and I appreciate her so much. But it's going to be agonizing to do this tomorrow. I've never had an interview that I was so not looking forward to as this one.
Me either, but hopefully... I don't know.
She always says to wait. See, this is what I like about Carrie. Some mediums or psychics, they want your money. They want your reading as quick as possible. Carrie will tell you, wait at least 30 days before you contact me because you're the spirit of your pet needs to get organized. It needs to learn where it's at, what happened. And if you try to contact them 3 days later, it's probably not going to happen or mm-hmm. it's not going to be, you know, a good result.
Yeah.
To always wait 30 days. Now, how many people would tell you, I don't want your money right now. Mm-hmm. You need to wait.
Well, I mean, she has experience, so she knows.
But I'm just saying she's not doing it.
No, for the money.
I mean, obviously that's part of what her job is for the money, but she's not just doing anything she can to get your money. If it's not the right situation, she will tell you.
Yeah, she will.
And that's what I respect about her.
Mm-hmm. She's a beautiful soul for sure.
She absolutely is.
And on that kind of same token, we did put it on Facebook, but in case you guys aren't in our group or whatever, we've had some really wonderful gifts sent to us about Ninja. We just received this most beautiful blanket today from Jen and Russ. I mean, it is so beautiful, and we cannot thank them enough for that because it really touched our hearts. And, you know, Tammy sent us that stone with Ninja's face on it. And
his birth and death
thing. And we got two sets of wind chimes. I mean, you guys have really went beyond.
Yeah, Rebecca and Michael Brown and
his beautiful and his wife. And we just want to say thank you, guys, because that meant the world to us. And we know Ninja was a big part of our show. And it's so hard to look over and not see him on the floor or whatever, or snoring or anything like that. I don't think we're ever going to get used to that. But you guys really opened up your hearts and, you know, helped us through this hard time. It's still hard. You know, we were taking a few days to relax and chill, and that's all we could think about was him. I know it's going to take a lot of time, but, you know, he was our baby, and I just want to say thank you guys for doing that, and everybody else that's reached out and sent messages and all this stuff.
Gotten tons of cards, tons of messages. Oh, my goodness.
You guys have really, you were there for us at this time, and we cannot thank you enough.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'll say this again. Not all pets are the same.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved every pet I've ever had. And I've had one that was so special to me. And it hurt when he was gone. She was gone. But it doesn't compare to Ninja.
Mm-mm.
And it's not a knock against any other pets. It's not a knock against your pets.
Mm-mm.
But sometimes there was a connection that goes way beyond pet and owner.
Yeah.
It's best friends. It's child. And we will never compare losing Ninja to someone losing a child.
No, never.
It's not the same thing. But I think it's probably the next thing.
Yeah.
Because as I've said, and I know this sucks to say this, you know, I lost my mom. And as bad as that hurt, it hurt worse to lose Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because you have routines, you know, that you have that every day is affected. You know, my mom and I didn't have the closest relationship, and, you know, it still hurt like hell, but it was something that, you know, I still think about my mom and sometimes get emotional, you know, 18 years later, roughly. And that's the way it should be. But, you know, I don't think I've had an emotional hurt like losing Ninja in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, been almost 6 weeks or 7 weeks almost. It will be, I think, Wednesday. It would be 7 weeks. And it still seems like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. There, I can't talk about him without breaking down. Surprised I made it this far. And I think at least once a day I break down. I broke down probably 30 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because the most random thing, you know, I was outside picking up stuff in the yard to cut the grass, and it's like there's the little lights that I put down so he could see to, you know, jump down off the porch because it gets dark over there. And that's where he got off on the porch. And, you know, he couldn't climb up the first step because it's a little tall. And we had these little, you know, concrete pavers there for him to crawl up. It's just like, and then there's a toy of his in here. It's like every day something reminds you of it, you know. Or I keep running across these videos on Facebook from our memories because we literally posted something from Ninja every other day. You know, we've got pictures of him all over the house, like people with their kids. And it's like everywhere you look, there is constant reminders. You know, I was telling somebody, you know, I had a routine. Like we lived in this house for 7 years, almost every night because Tracy's a late going to bed. So I usually went to bed before her. And every night I would pick Ninja up and take Ninja up the stairs. And the whole way up the stairs, every night, it was like, are you Daddy's Ninja? Daddy loves you so much. I mean, up every step. Every step, there was something being said to him. And then we'd get into bed, and I'd hug and kiss on him a little bit. And then we'd go to bed, and the next morning we'd get up, and then I'd get up early and take him out. And then it's like something that's happened literally every day for 10 years just doesn't happen anymore. And, you know, you build a camaraderie with an animal. I mean, Ninja knew both of us backwards and forwards. We knew him backwards and forwards. You know, we knew everything about the way he was going to respond to any situation. And it's unconditional love. And that's something that you don't get very often. Not in people, not in animals. And it just sucks to not for him to be there anymore. And it hurts. It hurts every day.
But anyway, we just wanted to say thank you, guys.
Yeah. All right, let's listen to Leslie Cody. Hey, guys, I am excited for this one tonight because we get to have a conversation that honestly I've never had on the air before. I have had a similar conversation to what we're going to have tonight with Bishop James Long, but that was just more of a personal conversation. But the more I thought about it, and the more I got to know our special guest tonight, Leslie Cody, I thought this would be a great conversation for the masses to hear. First of all, thanks for coming on, Leslie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
So, Leslie, you are a therapist. So you've got the training, you know, for psychological aspects of somebody's life or all different things that they could be dealing with from a mental aspect. But you're also a demonologist. So you can handle that side of the aspect if you rule out that it's not something that's more mentally going on and it's more spiritually going on. You can handle both kinds. And I thought it would be fun to have you on to talk about basically how you juggle both. And when someone comes to you and says that they have an issue that they think may be spiritual or demonic or whatever the case, however you want to term it, how you start basically narrowing that down to see if it, which side of the fence it's actually on. So first of all, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really important, I think, to be able to balance the two, for there to be some kind of psychiatric assessment early on. So it kind of depends. It's really individualistic. So case by case is different, depending on what kind of activity they're reporting or what experiences they're reporting. Sometimes there's investigation involved. Sometimes there's a biopsycho session or biopsychosocial assessment involved, just to get more information. But I like to gather as much information about the family, the dynamic, the individuals as possible. And that includes somewhat of a psychological assessment.
So let's kind of role play a little bit here. Let's say that I call you up and I say, Leslie, my name's Jerry. I'm having some strange things happen. I think I may be possessed or I may have an attachment. And I start telling you things that are going on. Let's say, for example, that I'm hearing voices in my head telling me to do things that I probably shouldn't be doing and I know is wrong. And I feel like I don't have control of my body sometimes when this entity has control of me. What's your next step?
My first step is going to be assessing safety. It's always safety. If someone's telling me, you know, they don't have control over themselves or they feel like they're being taken over or being told to do something that could endanger themselves or someone else, that immediately is going to grab my attention. So I'll take that route first, you know, ensuring that everyone's safe. And then assuming everyone is safe, there's a list of, I call them intake questions that I like to do with a person that talks about, well, it's just, it's getting more information about the situation. So once we've kind of ruled that everyone's safe, then we're going to move on to, all right, tell me more about the activity. What exactly are you experiencing? When did it start? I like to know if at any point they have dabbled in witchcraft or been involved in a seance or Ouija board sessions, things like that, or if anyone in the household has. Those things, knowing those things off the bat can really guide me in which direction I need to go next.
Now, are those things more important than what their actual religion might be, or how religious they are, how often they go to church, what type of church, or is that two completely separate things?
I would say they're separate things, but for the most part, they're separate things. They're separate questions, lines of questioning. That does factor in as well. So I like to know, you know, what their spiritual background is, if they've been baptized, if they were raised in any particular church. But most importantly, what are their religious beliefs right now? Where are they currently?
How often do you find that someone that calls you up that thinks that they may have something spiritual going on, how often have they just recently had some kind of a major trauma in their life?
You know, from what I see, trauma is a part of everyone's life. I had a supervisor that used to say, if you breathe, you have trauma. And I think it's absolutely true. So, and then with the pandemic, you know, traumatizing everyone, that's been difficult for everyone, no matter where you are or who you are. So that factors in as well. But I would say, about half probably will report that they've gone through something very recently. It definitely plays a part.
Where's your stance? I know this is demon is one of those quote unquote words that gets thrown around a lot in the paranormal world. Some people are on the side that, you know what, it very seldom is it ever a demon. It's usually something else. And then there's the other half that probably states that demons are pretty much everywhere you look. It's just whether they interfere or not. Where do you stand on the amount of demons, I would say, that are actually causing some of these problems?
Well, I would say both of those things are true. I do believe that they're everywhere and they're always watching. But I don't believe that they are as actively involved, at least not with extraordinary activity. You know, everyone's kind of subject to the temptations, the daily temptations. But as far as people reporting that they have demonic activity, I think that that's much less common than people think it is. Especially when you get into the more serious aspects like oppression or possession specifically, is really not as common as people may think.
Now, I'm going to stereotype a little bit here, but most people, I would say most physicians, most scientists, they don't believe in the paranormal. It's 100%. If I can't prove it, it doesn't exist. So it's unusual for me to run into somebody that has a medical background training, especially dealing in mental health issues, that also believes in the other side as well. How do you think you were able to see both sides? Did you have an experience or something when you were younger that maybe made you say, hey, I think both can coexist? So tell me a little bit about that.
I did have experiences of my own when I was young. They began when I was really, really young. I'm going to say probably between the ages of 5 and 8. And then I also sort of made some iffy decisions as a child, not knowing what I was doing. I played with a Ouija board at one point. Learned real fast that that was not wise. But I was a curious kid, you know. So I had experiences of my own, shadow people, sleep paralysis. My house was pretty haunted. Everyone in the household was experiencing these things. And it sort of led me on a path of questioning. So, which I think led to the calling of demonology. I didn't realize back then that that's where it was going to go. I was an investigator for about 14 years. I worked as a manager, building manager at Ashmore Estates. So been in a lot of haunted buildings and experienced a lot of investigators and a lot of investigations of my own and then other people as well. So I've seen a lot at this point. I've seen a lot, and it just kind of one step led to the next until, you know, the bishop, you mentioned Bishop James Long. I was having a conversation with him and he said, you know, have you ever wondered if maybe you have a calling to demonology? After we talked about one specific case that I had that was pretty intense. And I said, you know, I've kind of wondered, but I don't know about that. He said, maybe you need to spend some time in prayer and discernment about it. And I did. And that's kind of what got me here. So those things were very separate, the psychological training and the spiritual. I've always had a very rich spiritual life. But it wasn't until I'd say maybe 6 or 7 years ago that they really kind of came together. And I realized these are extremely complementary, having this knowledge and that knowledge together. So, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Ashmore. I was just talking to Robin Terry yesterday. We had Robin on a couple of weeks ago. He was our special guest. As a matter of fact, the last interview that we had on, I think, was Robin.
So, yeah. He's done some great work with the building. I was actually building manager before Robin bought it. But yeah, he's done great things to it. I'm glad to see that.
Nice. So let's talk about being a demonologist. There may not be a field in the paranormal world that gets more poked fun of or more criticized than being a demonologist. There are people that say, well, you can't take a class and be a demonologist. This takes years and years and years of you know, tweaking it and learning and on the job and, you know, this and that. Do you feel that you get criticized by people when they find out you're a demonologist, or they automatically roll their eyes, or what do you have happen to you when you tell people you're a demonologist?
Well, depending on who I'm speaking to, it's not always what I lead with. For that reason, mostly I see people think that it's really, really cool. That's their response. Oh, wow, that's awesome. And I'm like, not exactly. There's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of gravity to it. Or I do also sometimes get people going, oh, wow, one of those, you know, like she's not rooted in reality at all. And then it does tend to kind of confuse them when I tell them, you know, I'm both a therapist and a demonologist. And they go, wait a minute, what? How does that work? You know, because it's two sides of the spectrum.
Well, that'll bring me to my next question. Utilizing both professions. When you're talking to someone, at what point, and I know this is going to vary from each person, so you can't be specific, but at what point have you ruled enough stuff out to where you say, you know what, I think this is spiritual? What all type of things have you ruled out to make you think that a situation is spiritual and not more of a mental aspect?
Right. Well, I want to look at things like any criteria that they might meet that could look like a thought disorder, schizophrenia, mood disorders, sometimes bipolar, one or two, usually one that comes with a lot of mania can sometimes look like that. But I want to look at medical things too. You know, is there a seizure disorder? Is there any kind of, and of course I'm not a medical professional, but I make note of those things. Because I think it's important to note. So I'll look at those. I'll look at, you know, does this person meet criteria for schizophrenia, or do they meet criteria? Are they experiencing anything that could look like bipolar or possibly personality disorders? I look at things like that. But I don't think I'm really ready yet to say if something is spiritual until I've met the person. I've sat down with them, because usually it's an initial phone call, and then, you know, I'll meet with them in person, be able to be present with them and then in their environment as well. And then sometimes that involves investigation and sometimes prayer. And we kind of go from there, and then I can say, okay, this is definitely something spiritual.
Have you had any situations where you felt like something was spiritual? You've eliminated everything. You're like, I'm 100% on board and spiritual. And then after getting into some further situations, you changed your mind. Has that ever happened?
I have been on the fence a couple times. And those are really sometimes confusing cases. I can rule out mental illness. And then I think, okay, well, that means it's more likely to be spiritual. But then I find that it's not necessarily spiritual either. At least nothing that I can see. So yeah, sometimes we're just dealing with what I call paranormal Munchausen syndrome, which is essentially kind of a paranoia mixed with some attention-seeking behaviors. Sometimes people can get themselves really excited watching a lot of paranormal shows and watching a lot of paranormal movies, and then they kind of get paranoid and they think things are happening in their house, or maybe things are happening but aren't necessarily paranormal. So yeah, those things come up quite a bit, actually.
So let's say that you've ruled out everything and you're saying, okay, my situation, I think it is like in my earlier scenario to where I think I might be possessed. Now you've talked to me, you've ruled out anything mental, you think it's spiritual. What's the next step?
Well, then I'm going to meet with them. We're going to sit down. Usually there's a process of consultation, prayer. Frequently they're looking for a house blessing. So we'll bless the house, blessing the people, blessing the house. And then what happens during that period of time is going to determine whether, I'm the one that can help them through this process, or whether we need to call in the clergy.
Now, when you say call in the clergy, are we talking about specialists or, like a Bishop Long who does exorcists, exorcisms and stuff like that? Or are we talking about just somebody from their local church that might be able to come help?
Well, I mean, that depends on the person and what their religious beliefs are. I think that what they believe carries a lot of weight. It's not necessarily about what I believe, or it's about what they believe and what's meaningful to them. So if I need to call in their pastor or get their clergy involved because that's what they're most comfortable with, then that's what I'll do. A lot of times I'll see that they don't necessarily have a church that they're affiliated with or clergy that they know, and they'll just say, well, I don't know who to call. And at that point, then I can make some suggestions, kind of get an idea for, what their preferences are, and then we go from there.
Have you had any experiences with other religions that, not other, but a religions that maybe their beliefs go against doing any type of exorcism, but they're don't know what else to do? I mean, has something like that popped up yet where it's like, I'm calling you, but I probably shouldn't be calling you?
Well, just the one, but that conversation didn't go very far. I haven't had that experience often at all. Most people will tell me that they're Christian, but they aren't practicing. I have met a couple people who have said that they are Wiccan, a couple people who have said that they are atheist or agnostic. But more times than not, they identify as Christian, but they're not going to church. They'll say they don't really have a very active prayer life. Essentially, they believe, but they're not really applying any of it to their life currently.
Interesting. So, did you actually train under Bishop Long? I know he offers demonology courses and stuff like that, and he's helped a lot of people along the way. Was that more or less who was your teacher, so to speak?
Well, I took his demonology class actually years and years ago. And I worked as the case manager for the USOCC, the United States Old Catholic Church, and the Paranormal Clergy Institute. And that's how I met Rich Valdez, who is my mentor. So I spoke with the bishop. He kind of oversaw that process and suggested that I train with Rich. And then I trained for about 2 years, a little over 2 years, I think, with Rich.
Is there any cases that you could share, obviously without being specific with to the person, but is there any cases you could share that have just stood out amongst others that actually were spiritual?
Yeah, there's one in particular that really stands out, and it was a woman and her family. She had two children. She was married. lived with a couple other family members, and she had reached out to another team, actually, and they were too far away. So they called us and asked if we could follow up with her. Where I was living at the time, she was only about 30 minutes away. So I said, yeah, sure, we'll give her a call. I did that. And she immediately just flooded me with texts and emails of evidence. And I'd never seen that before. She had already obtained so much evidence on her own. And some of them were photos of her children having been scratched or marked, burned. So, of course, as a counselor at that time, my first thought was, okay, I don't know what's going on yet, but people are getting hurt and children are getting hurt. And so we're gonna intervene and find out, you know, whether it's spiritual or it's psychological, this family needs help. So we went in. And certainly she did. We were able to capture all kinds of evidence. But it ended up being a very, very intense case. A lot of extraordinary activity. And I witnessed some things on that case that I hadn't witnessed before, despite having been on demonic cases prior to that. This one was a whole league of its own. We're talking like levitation, people being scratched repeatedly, sulfur smells, growls, lights off and on. I mean, it was a horror movie, really, in a small Illinois town.
Were you guys able to resolve the issue, and how long did it take?
Well, we handed it over to clergy. She had called three pastors, I believe, before we got there. And they were all terrified. She was actually transiently possessed. So when they would come in and try to bless the house, I guess she would be overtaken, which scared them. They were not ready. And two of them just completely walked out in the middle of the house blessing and wouldn't speak to her again. She said the third one came in and did at least stay with her long enough to pray over her until it passed. But after that, she said 2 days later, she was still trying to contact him to get him to come back, and he just wouldn't speak to her. So, you know, I made the suggestion, maybe we need to go with a church or some clergy that's more familiar with this kind of activity. And she didn't love that idea. And so we went with the church that she was more comfortable with, but we passed it on to them and let them take it from there.
Have you had any contact with her afterwards to hear how it all turned out?
I have not, because there was a lot of stuff that was targeted toward us. I think that that it probably wouldn't have been safe for us to stay involved. And that's really sort of that differentiation between where we step in as demonologists, or at the time I was not a demonologist, I was an investigator, and then where clergy needs to get involved. And I think when it hits a certain intensity, and it's very obvious that this is a case of spiritual affliction, I'm not sanctioned to go up against a demon. I'm not an exorcist. I'm not qualified to do that. So at that point, it would endanger myself or my team to continue to try and be a part of that. So we just hand it over to the people who are.
You mentioned a transient possession. What exactly is a transient possession as opposed to, and if there's other types of possessions, let me know that too, because that was a new one I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, so there's a transient possession and then there's full possession. Transient possession is sort of when the demon is afflicting the person but is not there 100% of the time. It kind of comes and goes. And to my understanding, that's much more common than full possession is when it's overtaken them and it's just constant. It's relentless. There's no pause. But with transient possession, you know, people can walk around and just live their daily lives and go to work, and they may or may not even be fully aware of what's happening.
All right. I'm going to say something, and don't take this as a knock, because it's really not a knock by any means, but You said, you know, as a demonologist, hey, I was, you know, I'm not an exorcist. I'm not trained to do that. What is the difference then between a paranormal investigator and a demonologist? If a demonologist has a cutoff, what would you consider the difference to be?
I would say the first thing would be the sanctioning of the church. We're trained specifically to handle demons, to handle severe cases of hauntings, and particularly spiritual affliction. So it goes beyond just sort of the infestation of a location into now it's attached to a person and it's influencing that person. So demonologists are more going to lean toward assisting the people. Sometimes that's with consultation or prayer, blessing a house. But I would say the biggest difference is a religious demonologist is going to be properly trained and affiliated with a religious organization.
Awesome. Great answer. Leslie, it's been an absolute blast having you on. I feel like I've learned so much today.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. And we'll have to get you on again soon because I'm sure you have way more stories than what we were able to get to today.
Oh, I have a ton.
I bet you got a lot. We'll have to have you on next time and just talk about your stories from your paranormal investigating days.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Leslie. I greatly appreciate getting this insight from both sides of the fence.
It was great to talk to you. Thanks, Terry.
You're welcome. All right, guys, that wraps it up for us tonight, and we will be back at the beginning of next week to talk to you guys.
Yeah, and you guys have a great Derby week. Derby's coming up, and Louisville's ready to party. So y'all have a great Derby week, and we hope everyone else has a blessed week.
Hey, guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.